This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe.
Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, blowing the whistle on the mistreatment of whistleblowers. Chelsea, that actually is the episode that we're doing. I just thought it would make a good opener.
It really did. Blew it out of the water.
Well, weird segue from coming out just after the episode on disclosure and that UFO coming in 2027, where they're talking about whistleblowers being uneasy coming forward. So they had to submit it anonymously. Well, I guess what we're going to be going over is stories why these people might feel bad coming forward as whistleblowers, that something might happen to them. We're going to talk about people who apparently committed suicide in the process of blowing the whistle on a corporation that they worked for.
Okay, I'm ready for it.
I believe I have 5 examples of this happening.
How come you don't know?
It's either 5 or 6. I can't remember off the top of my head. It's a script that doesn't have the numbers at the top.
You would think it would, but hey.
I limited it to everything 2000 onwards.
Okay.
Some less recent, some more recent. Not all of them are going to necessarily have suicide not as the highest likelihood of what happened. But nonetheless, it is always odd when people come forward and then mysteriously they end up not being able to come forward anymore.
That's true. Can I just ask a quick question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you be a whistleblower?
For doing this episode, or do you just mean, like, in general, would I be a whistleblower if I got information?
Yeah, if you got information, like, what would it take for you to become a whistleblower?
I mean, it really depends on the situation, and is it harming somebody, I think, is always the biggest thing.
Would you whistleblow if you knew UFOs existed?
That's not whistleblowing, though.
That because you fabricated a document saying
yeah,
you collected
sure.
All this whistleblower testimony?
The important thing with a whistleblower is normally should be handled through a proper hierarchy, but it's not being handled correctly. So you have to go elsewhere to deal with it. Whether that be the government, the police, a competitor, the media, you need to go outside of your normal hierarchy to deal with it. I think that's an easy enough explanation of what a whistleblower is.
Okay. When I hear that, I don't think of UFO people as whistleblowers then, because they're not trying to go through proper channels to like when you say that, I think you're trying to fix something.
Well, generally that is what you should be doing as a whistleblower. They are trying to fix something. I guess if you're doing it for the UFO purposes, you're saying that how we're handling this and the secrecy is the problem. So they can't whistleblow through their hierarchy because it is secrecy in itself that is their issue with it.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is all very good conversation that I need to...
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
...feel my way through right now.
And okay, that does continue. Bring up a question, is if you're anonymously doing it, are you really blowing a whistle? Because I find that is an odd way to do it. If there's no evidence outside of an anonymous whistleblower to show that there's a wrongdoing that needs to be fixed.
That's true, but it makes me take pause if it's something bad enough. That might cause a big company to lose money or something like that. Something that somebody wants to keep secret.
Yeah.
That would give me pause to not do either whistleblow or give my name.
And I should also say that just because you're whistleblowing doesn't mean that any illegal activities have actually taken place. You may just disagree with the practice that is at hand. You may incorrectly understand what you actually saw or are saying, and it may actually not be any issue, or it just might not be something that you agree with. It's not wrong. It's not illegal. but it's something that you don't ethically agree with.
Okay.
An example might be hiring practices and just saying that we only hire people from Yale. That's not something publicly disclosed. You can say that. There's actually nothing legally wrong with that.
Or would I whistleblow something like that too?
You might say that to the media and say, like, look, I feel like this is a discriminatory practice. This is something that people should know about. And hey, that's not actually something that you can't be discriminated against, weirdly enough, not being educated in the right place. Although that brings up a whole issue with the rich being able to get jobs. Let's leave that out there.
Okay, I think this provided me a lot of clarity going into episode about whistleblowing.
And of course, where can any whistleblower episode start but the Enron crisis of the early 2000s? Chelsea, you've heard of Enron, right?
Yeah, they're the ones in the that, oh no, we haven't covered him in so long. What's his name? That lawyer.
You're thinking of Exxon?
Oh, okay.
No, Enron also is an energy company. Enron famously crashed hard in the early 2000s when it turns out that they were cooking their books to make it look like they were incredibly profitable by basically shifting all of their losses off to a bunch of shell companies to make it look like they're profitable, and it turns out they were not. Some people ended up going to jail for this. Huge deal. And spoiler alert, there's going to be a lot of death in these stories, and basically the first person's name that I say in every story, they're going to die. So just don't get too attached.
Okay, well, thanks for spoiling the whole episode. I won't get too attached to these first people.
John Clifford Baxter was an Enron executive when the company's massive criminal activities were discovered. By the way, you should know it's illegal to cook your books to make you look more profitable than you are for a publicly traded company. That should go without saying, but that's incredibly illegal.
I appreciate that.
But like, rich person illegal, not poor person illegal. That's a different thing.
Okay, I could never commit it. That's okay.
Earlier, he had reportedly challenged Enron's management team, including CEO Jeff Skilling, about the company's corrupt transactions, and then resigned in protest. Congress initiated hearings to investigate Enron. Baxter was considered to be crucial to the case because his close relationship to Enron's CEO could have provided valuable insights into the company's criminal activities. But 2 weeks before he was set to testify, Baxter was found in his car with a gunshot wound to the head. Police said the death was a suicide, but many details of Baxter's death did raise doubts about that conclusion. And this is weird. I'm going to go through this article that I found from that time, and then we're going to go through the wiki article right after that, just to kind of give you a balance of what they look like.
I'm interested. I feel like the wiki article is going to be very contradictory.
And weirdly enough, it's going to cite the article that we read for what they're saying. So let's just follow along with that. On the morning of January 25th, he was found in his car, shot dead. Police were criticized for calling it a suicide before investigating, so they kept the case open. The fact that it's still open more than 2 months later has made the Cliff Baxter case prime fodder for murder conspiracy theories, reported CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson. Adding to the mystery is a letter, perhaps a suicide note that Baxter's wife is fighting to keep private. Groups like the Texas Freedom of Information Foundation want at least part of it made public. Quote, I believe very strongly that Enron is mentioned in it, end quote, said Joel White, the group's attorney. More questions are raised in police autopsy and lab reports obtained by CBS News. Police won't talk while the case is open, so CBS News asked two experts, independent coroner Cyril Wecht and former homicide detective Bill Wagner, to review the reports. While suicide appears likely, both experts say the documents make it impossible to discount foul play. Asked why he couldn't rule out murder, Wagner said, quote, because murder can be made to look like a suicide. Someone who is knowledgeable about forensics can very well have the ability to stage a murder, commit a murder, and stage it to look as if it was a suicide, understanding what the police are going to be looking for, end quote. The experts found several things highly unusual. First, the peculiar ammunition, not regular bullets, but something called rat shot. Quote, this kind of ammunition cannot be easily or readily traced back to the gun from which it was fired, end quote, explained Wecht. Quote, it's not as frequently used by people for any reason. It's not the type of ammunition one finds in guns. It has a specific purpose, shooting at snakes and rodents in order to get a distribution pattern of the small pellets contained within the nose portion of the bullet. It's not something that a person is likely to have and to use if they intend to kill themselves, end quote, said Wecht. Other unanswered questions include mysterious wounds on one hand and unexplained shards of glass in Baxter's shirt. All reasons to look deeper to rule out murder, but Wagner says glaring police errors may make it harder to close the books on the Baxter case. First, nobody wrapped the hands to preserve evidence. Quote, when the body finally did arrive for the autopsy, the hands hadn't even been bagged, end quote, said Wagner. Quote, I'm just amazed, frankly, that the hands were not bagged. From what I've seen looking at the vehicle, it doesn't appear that they have fingerprinted it either, end quote, continued Wagner. Quote, the police narrative is vague for this type of investigation. It's important to get a timeline of the events that took place through the course of the investigation that appears to be lacking in the original report from the crime scene. Without being able to piece together what was done when, it's very difficult to understand the events that took place and how they unfolded from that report, end quote, said Wagner. The gun and other evidence were moved before photos were taken. The body was moved as well. There's a puzzling mention of blood outside the car from someone laying Baxter on the ground. Wagner says that only should have happened if rescuers put him out to revive him. But even that scenario doesn't add up. The body is back in the car when the funeral home arrives. Quote, and that's something that is not explained in the police report. I think there were some very important things omitted from the original investigation report that should have been included in it. I would like to have known what were the first couple things the fire department did to treat the victim allegedly as he was sitting in the car, and from that point, how did they change the initial crime scene? What was moved? Did they remove the body from the vehicle? It's actually unclear how they treated the actual scene. End quote, said Wagner. Incredibly, even though an autopsy is required by law, none was ordered. By the time that the decision was reversed, Baxter's body was being processed at a funeral home. The coroner says police still won't tell her exactly who handled and who saw the body before it finally reached her and won't even give her routine information. The official finding on Baxter's death may well end up being suicide, but for now this death certificate remains unsigned and at least one provocative question is left permanently unanswered. What exactly Cliff Baxter would have told investigators about the biggest corporate scandal in history?
So he didn't actually whistleblow anything. He was just...
He was set to testify. This was in another article as well. When talking with a former business associate 2 days before his death, Baxter said that he might need a bodyguard after agreeing to assist in the Enron investigation. But this is now from the Wikipedia article, which gives different information.
Which is so weird because you can't at all edit Wikipedia.
First off, very important, Baxter was sued personally when the Enron stuff was going on for $30 million after the bankruptcy of Enron due to his sale of $30 million worth of Enron stocks in the months prior to Enron's bankruptcy in December of 2001. Fortune magazine writer Bethany McLean described Baxter in Enron, the smartest guys in the room, as being a good deal maker, but also being a manic depressive. Skilling stated before Congress in February of 2002 that Baxter had visited Skilling shortly after Enron had declared bankruptcy and was heartbroken by what had happened to Enron. In his testimony, Skilling quoted Baxter saying, quote, they're calling us child molesters. That will never wash off, end quote.
Whoa. They're linking back to that article with the stuff?
No, that was before Congress.
Okay.
And sorry, this is in the Wikipedia. This part is where it links back to the article. I will tell you when it links back to the article.
Okay.
On January 25th, 2002, after agreeing to testify before congressional committees in February of 2002, after being subpoenaed regarding his knowledge and evidence of the scandal at Enron, Baxter was found dead in his black Mercedes in Sugar Land, Texas, with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The ammunition used was a Glazer safety slug, which at the time was misreported as a snake shot. That's the added context. That cites back to the story we read, which doesn't bring that up at all.
No, it didn't.
Although they could be saying that that was misreported, that it was snake shot in that article. I can't quite understand what they meant by that.
Well, usually when you're citing something, you're citing it on Wikipedia to the source that you found.
Yeah, which now that I'm reading it, might be saying that this article misreported it as snake shot.
Okay.
So that makes a little more sense. But in any event, there are some weird peculiarities with that story.
Definitely.
Next up, do you remember the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and fervor of discontent with what Iraq was doing in those times?
No.
How Iraq had weapons of mass destruction?
Oh, yeah.
And that led us to invade them?
Okay, that's what
this story has to do with that. Okay. In 2003, David Kelly, a weapons inspector for the British government, was thrust into the public spotlight when BBC journalist Andrew Gilligan published their off-the-record conversation revealing that British government's investigators had not found any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, despite the Bush administration's claims otherwise.
Uh-oh.
Which, by the way, we never found any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which justified the war that was done there. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people died, thanks to our invasion of that country, which Saddam Hussein was probably horrible. I don't think we needed to murder all those people.
We, Canada, did not invade them. I don't think. We
You know what? I can't remember. I know we did Afghanistan. I would have to actually look. But yeah, in any event, it was a horrible war.
Yeah.
I have to have my opinion on that, which was not justified in any way.
Horrible.
Unknown to Kelly, the journalist then published the information he had received from Kelly and cited him as the source. So this is an unbeknownst whistleblower, unbeknownst to him. The British and American public, if not the world altogether, was outraged by the revelation, which suggested that the Bush administration and the British government were lying about their reasons for invading Iraq. Kelly was summoned to appear at a committee hearing in British Parliament on July 15, 2003. He was rigorously questioned about his conversation with the BBC journalist and why it was revealed to the public. Around the same time, Kelly met with British Ambassador David Brochet. Kelly told Brochet that he had promised Iraqi officials that there would be no war if they cooperated, but that he would probably be found dead if Iraq were invaded. 2 days after Kelly's testimony to the British Parliament, he was found dead outside his home. He had answered some emails that morning and then left for his morning walk. Kelly's body was found in the woodlands area about 1.5 kilometers from his home. He had ingested 29 pain pills and his left wrist was slashed with a knife he had owned since childhood. A lot of painkillers and cut his wrist. An investigation was launched into the suspicious circumstances surrounding his death. The official conclusion was that Kelly committed suicide. After the announcement, his medical reports were...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Field from public view for 70 years. However, a series of doctors published a rebuttal of the cause of death in The Guardian, arguing that the cuts on Kelly's wrists would not have resulted in a fatal amount of blood loss. They also claimed that the amount of painkillers that Kelly had ingested were not enough to kill him. As a result, Dr. Andrew Watt told British authorities that he believed Kelly had been murdered. The former leader of the Conservative Party, Michael Howard, and the former Liberal Democrat MP, Norman Baker, both thought Kelly was murdered. In 2007, Baker published The Strange Death of David Kelly, in which he argued that Kelly did not die by suicide. Kelly's family expressed their displeasure at the publication. His sister-in-law said, quote, "It's just raking over old bones. I can't speak for the whole family, but I've read it all, that is, theories about Baker's death. Every word, and I don't believe it," end quote. In December 2009, six doctors applied to the Oxford coroner's office to reopen the inquest, claiming that there was insufficient evidence for Hutton's conclusion of suicide. Their request was turned down on legal advice, and they were informed that the evidence relating to Kelly's death was to be kept secret for 70 years. Hutton stated that he did this, quote, "solely in order to protect Dr. Kelly's widow and daughter for the remainder of their lives," the daughters being in their 20s at the time, "from the distress which they would suffer from further discussion of the details of Dr. Kelly's death in the media," end quote.
That doesn't happen, though.
That it is weird. Both very weirdly handled.
Yeah.
Next up, Chelsea, we're going to move to the wonderful world of AI.
Okay.
With a guy by the name of Sushir Balaji. Sushir Balaji spent 4 years as an artificial intelligence researcher at OpenAI. Among other projects, he was involved in gathering and organizing the internet data used to train GPT-4. I should say OpenAI is the company who makes ChatGPT, a language model used by the company's online chatbot, ChatGPT. He also worked on a precursor model called WebGPT. He left the company in August 2024 after becoming disillusioned with its business practices. After leaving OpenAI, Balaji said he had been working on personal projects. He planned to create a nonprofit centered on machine learning and neurosciences, according to his mother. In an October 23rd, 2024 New York Times profile, Balaji alleged that the products like ChatGPT violated United States copyright law because they're trained on products of business competitors and because the chatbot's output can then imitate and substitute other products. He said that ChatGPT and similar chatbots are ruining the commercial viability of the individuals and organizations who produce the data that the AI systems are trained on. He was quoted as saying, quote, "If you believe what I believe, you have to just leave the company," end quote. The New York Times piece contains a summary of Balaji's essay called "When Does Generative AI Qualify for Fair Use?" published on his website earlier that week. In the essay, he mathematically analyzed outputs of large language models such as ChatGPT and argues that they fail the four-factor test for determining fair use under U.S. copyright law. He further suggests that the arguments could be applied to other generative artificial intelligences products as well. At the time, OpenAI was being sued for copyright infringement by prominent authors and publishers, including the New York Times. In a November 18, 2024 court filing, Balaji was identified by the New York Times attorneys as one of a number of people who might have relevant documents in the copyright case against OpenAI. Balaji had said that he would testify against the AI company. OpenAI argued that its software was, quote, "grounded in fair use and related international copyright principles that are fair for creators and support innovation, and was trained on publicly available data," end quote. But on November 26, 2024, police said they found Balaji dead in his apartment in San Francisco when they arrived there after being requested to conduct a well-being check. He was 26 years old at that time. Police claimed that there was no evidence of foul play during the initial investigation, and the San Francisco chief medical examiner determined the death was a suicide, as has the San Francisco Police Department. San Francisco police have said the investigation is open and active. As of January 20th, 2025, no official documents of the medical examiner's autopsy have been released. The office said that they would be released once toxicology tests are completed. Balaji's death has prompted public and media interest, particularly given his whistleblowing claims and status as a custodian witness in a lawsuit against OpenAI. A spokesperson for his former employer, OpenAI, said he was devastated by the news of Balaji's death. Balaji's parents and friends believe the circumstances of his death are unclear. His family and close friends report that he had had no history of mental health issues or distress and was in generally good spirits after his birthday that week. The parents say they hired an independent investigator to determine the cause of death. They have a private autopsy conducted by Dr. Joseph Cohen, which Balaji's mother said, quote, "doesn't confirm the cause of death stated by the police," end quote. Balaji's parents believe their son was murdered by a firearm and have called for an FBI investigation. They cite evidence from the independent investigation, such as a downward bullet travel path that would be impossible by a self-administered gunshot, and unexplained evidence like a tuft of hair found at the scene that did not belong to Shashir. Balaji's mother declined to share the second autopsy with the Mercury News and Washington Examiner, two San Francisco newspapers. And then a few assholes that I don't actually like, but their names come up: Elon Musk, Tucker Carlson, California Congressman Ro Khanna, and San Francisco Supervisor Jackie Fielder have publicly echoed Balaji's parents' skepticism and calls for an investigation. Balaji's mother discussed her son's death on Carlson's podcast, The Tucker Carlson Show, on January 15th, 2025. I hate that I had to bring that up, but whatever, we're here. Doubts about the cause of death spread on social media even before Balaji's parents had made their public statements. California State University East Bay lecturer Nolan Higdon described the public discourse as, quote, "baseless conspiracy theory," end quote, and mentioned social media monetization schemes and advertising revenue as a financial incentive for social media influencers and podcasters to propagate it, end of quote, end of this story. Because this one's still unfolding. Next up, Chelsea, of course, none of these could be complete without us focusing in on the Boeing scandal. And I know you're aware of this one.
I was waiting for this one to come up.
Chelsea, did you know there are cases involved with the Boeing scandal?
I mean cases.
As in more than one whistleblower we're going to be talking about.
Yes. The other ones definitely have been in the news, but this one is quite prominent. Not at the moment, but in recent moments.
I think Boeing is still trying to figure out how the hell they're going to be a company from here. Well, let's face it, they're just going to get bailed out by the government. But they're not really recovering well from this.
They're saying a lot of pretty bad stuff.
And people keep mysteriously dying. Case in point, we're going to talk about John Barnett. John Barnett was born February of 1962 in Mount Shasta, California. In 1988, he moved to Camano Island, where he lived for 25 years, joined Boeing in 1988, where he became a quality inspector. Barnett worked his way into a leading position while at the Boeing Everett factory, which produces the 747, 767, and 777 planes, where he said he was impressed with Boeing's attention to quality and safety. While there, he developed an 11-course curriculum for training other auditors. From 2010 to 17, he worked as a quality control manager for Boeing's South Carolina plant, which produces the 787. Barnett blamed a culture shift between the Everett and South Carolina plants on the latter's management being from the military, where he said he was pressured pressured not to document defects and follow non-Boeing procedures. He characterized the defense-based management's motto as, quote, we're in Charleston and we can do anything we want, end quote. And their wishes to, quote, push planes out the door, make the cash register ring, end quote. He later said the factory and its management, quote, the whole place smelled of French fries, end quote, referring to the practice hiring mechanics whose previous experience was in fast food. Burnett said he was demoted and removed from management in 2013, for which he filed an ethics complaint. He was reassigned by the same manager that demoted him to another department in 2015. In 17, Burnett filed an FAA Air 21 whistleblower complaint against Boeing with OSHA, which is Occupational Health and Safety. In 2013, a senior manager downgraded Burnett's employment level for, quote, using email to express process violations, end quote, in place of face-to-face communications, which Burnett took to mean he shouldn't put problems in writing. The manager also pushed Burnett to get better at working in the gray areas and help find a way while maintaining compliance. Burnett said that management was pressuring and encouraging workers not to document defects, resulting in inaccurate build records, a violation of FAA regulations. He also said that Boeing was implementing a program that allowed mechanics to inspect and verify their own work, eliminating quality inspection employees altogether. During the investigation of a Spirit Aerosystems section with four quality inspectors, Burnett documented 300 defects, for which he was told they found too many defects. On a follow-up trip, Burnett was excluded, and only two inspectors were given a truncated timeline that only allowed them to document 50 defects, a reduction for which they were given accolades. Burnett attributed the pressure from management to overcome production delays with the 787, stating that documenting defects slows down the assembly line. In April 2024, another quality manager in Everett, Washington, Burl Myers, who had been at Boeing for 30 years, told the New York Times that the airline's manufacturer reprioritized schedule over quality. Also in April of 2024, quality engineer Sam Salepur, whatever, reported similar issues after 2021 delay of the 787 due to an unacceptable fuselage gap. Salepur claimed that to address the flaws of the company took shortcuts that forced the gaps closed instead of engineering new parts. Salepur has also filed a whistleblower complaint with the FAA against Boeing. Burnett claimed that in 2016, a senior manager installed a scrapped, dented hydraulic tube in a plane. He filed a complaint with Human Resources. Boeing stated that they had investigated and did not substantiate those claims. He raised issues of more missing defective parts to management, fearing that they had been installed. He claimed his bosses directed him to finish paperwork on missing parts without determining where they ended up. No action was taken by managers. Burnett claimed workers did not follow procedures to track components, allowing the loss of parts and later installations of defective parts. He stated that these installations were to prevent delays on the production line, as was the lack of following procedure. In 2017, Barnett's team found that 25% of the oxygen systems on the 787 would fail to send oxygen through the cylinders to passengers in the case of an emergency.
Oh my God.
Barnett said that his report to management was stonewalled, so he alerted the FAA. Boeing's internal investigation found malfunctioning oxygen masks. A 2017 FAA report determined that at least 53, quote, non-conforming, end quote, parts were missing and ordered Boeing to take remedial action, which is a big deal in the airline industry. There's a lot more that he complains about. We're just going to skip down a little bit. In 2019, Burnett came forward to discuss numerous malpractices of Boeing with British broadcaster BBC, including overworking employees and not providing proper maintenance to aircrafts. In 2019, Burnett appeared in a New York Times article raising additional quality issues with his former facility, speaking about the metal shavings, which I skipped over, unfortunately. Boeing subsequently denied his allegations. However, a 2017 review by the FAA had upheld several of Burnett's concerns. It was discovered that over 50, quote, non-conforming, end quote, plane components in the facility were considered missing as their location could not be found. In 2021, after a four-year-long investigation, OSHA closed the whistleblower complaint in favor of Boeing. Barnett and his lawyer appealed the decision and amended the lawsuit, claiming the firm had, quote, undermined his career because he had raised safety concerns at the Charleston plant, end quote. His attorney, Robert Turkowitz, criticized the effectiveness of whistleblower court systems because they do not have the power to subpoena documents from the defendant. In December of 2021, the United States Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation released a whistleblower report determining that the FAA failed to administer adequate oversight to address concerns from Boeing and FAA whistleblowers. Boeing had settled a criminal charge with the United States Department of Justice in September of that year for conspiracy to defraud the government regarding fatal design flaws in the maneuvering characteristics augmentation system of the 737 MAX. I did not know about that. In early 2024, Barnett issued further warnings regarding Boeing's work culture and vehicle safety following Alaska Airlines Flight 1282, in which a door was blown off.
Jesus, I remember that.
Barnett was in Charleston, South Carolina, the week of March 12, 2024, for his deposition stemming from his 2017 whistleblower complaint against Boeing. Before his death, he had given a deposition and had been undergoing direct examination by his own legal team and cross-examination by Boeing's. According to a March 2024 interview with his lawyer, Brian Knowles, Barnett was supported to report for the third day of his deposition for further questioning, but did not show up or respond to calls the next day. At 9:42 a.m. on March 9th, a hotel staff member heard a gunshot. At 10 a.m., Barnett's attorney called the hotel asking for a wellness check. He was found dead shortly afterwards in the hotel parking lot in his truck with a single gunshot wound to the head. He had his legally owned pistol in his hand with his finger still on the trigger and left a suicide note in the passenger seat on which he wrote, quote, "I can't do this any longer. I pray Boeing pays." End quote. Video surveillance showed Barnett left the hotel on the evening of March 8th, but returned a few minutes later and reparked, remaining inside his vehicle. No activity was observed of Barnett or his vehicle until the following morning on March 9th, when at 7:20 a.m. the vehicle lights blinked on and off. This vehicle was found to be locked and the key fob was in Barnett's pocket. On March 11th, the Charleston County Coroner's Office characterized his death as self-inflicted. After requests from his family and Barnett's attorney, the Charleston Police Department investigated the circumstances that led to his death. They found Barnett to be going through a period of serious personal distress, and on May 17th, they concluded that Barnett's death was a suicide related to chronic stress, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder caused by the whistleblower case.
There is video on
that's the what truck it sounds like. Left. Yes, that's a long time though. He's in there for over 12 hours.
I find that strange.
During the investigation, the police obtained his cell phone and medical records, which showed participation in the ongoing legal battle with Boeing exacerbated numerous mental health issues related to the whistleblower case he was suffering from. Fingerprint analysis found only Barnett's, and a ballistics report confirmed the trajectory of the bullet was consistent as originating from Barnett's hand. As of March 12th, the lawsuit against Boeing was pending continuation under Barnett's estate. His attorney stated that the case would still go to trial in June.
My question is, we're thinking there's ulterior motives to this, but there's no one else seen on the video.
That's what I'm gathering from that. Now, we are going to go through the conspiracy theories for it, though.
Great. Because I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
It seems like, why would this guy be fighting so hard, but then all of a sudden just give up?
And that is 2 out of 3 days, and it would basically be the end, because that's deposition. You might have to talk in court, but it's not going to be as hard as deposition. There is a conspiracy out there alleging that Boeing had assassinated Barnett, spread widely after a woman who identified herself as a friend of Barnett said that Barnett told her, quote, "If anything happens to me, it's not suicide," end quote. She said, quote, "They made his death look like a suicide," end quote. I have no idea who this she is. That's just what the Wikipedia article says. Boeing released a statement saying, quote, "We are saddened by Mr. Barnett's death and our thoughts are with his friends and family," end quote. Knowles and Turkowitz told CBS News that Barnett was in very good spirits and really looking forward to putting this phase of his life behind him and moving on, those being his lawyers. "We didn't see any indication he would take his own life. No one can believe it," end quote. Turkowitz called for a police investigation into his death, but later told Fox News that he did not believe Boeing had orchestrated his death. Barnett's family said that, quote, "He was looking forward to having his day in court and hoped that it would force Boeing to change its culture." And he was suffering from PTSD and anxiety attacks as a result of being subjected to the hostile work environment at Boeing, which he believed led to his death, end quote. His attorney said in a statement after the release of the coroner's report, quote, "Mr. Barnett's last words make clear that while Boeing may not have pulled the trigger, the company's responsible for his death," end quote. It should be noted, though, after this death, 10 new whistleblowers from Boeing and this other company that we're going to talk about end up coming forward.
Yeah.
So this doesn't exactly stop anything.
Are we going to talk about more? Because I know there's more deaths associated with the Boeing.
I could only find the two. We're going to talk about Joshua Dean now. And not a nice Wikipedia story about it. I found a good NPR article. But because it's an article, it's set up in a weird way. We talk about the death very early on, and then we get to everything else.
Okay.
This one's weird, though, because it's not a suicide.
Interesting.
Quote, "He passed away yesterday morning and his absence will be deeply felt. We will always love you," end quote. Dean's aunt, Carol Dean Parsons, said via Facebook. This is Joshua Dean. Dean was one of the first to flag potentially dangerous defects with 737 MAX jets at Spirit AeroSystems, a major Boeing supplier that was spun off from the Playmaker in 2005. Now federal investigators are looking more closely at Spirit and Boeing to understand what went wrong with the door panel that blew off an Alaska Airlines Boeing 737 MAX in midair in January. The latest chapter in a long and troubled relationship between the two companies. Quote, our thoughts are with Josh Dean's family. This is a sudden loss and it's stunning news here and for his loved ones. End quote, said Spirit spokesman Joe Pacino in a statement. Dean and Barnett were both represented by the same lawyer, Brian Knowles, Barnett being the last guy we just talked about. Quote, Josh's passing is a loss to the aviation community and the flying public. End quote, Knowles said in a statement. Quote, he possessed tremendous courage to stand up for what he felt was true and right and raise quality and safety issues. Aviation companies should encourage and incentivize those that do raise these concerns, end quote. Dean's mother and stepfather describe him as a studious and honest man, a health nut who rarely drank and attended church regularly. His career was helped by his prodigious memory and attention to detail, they said. Quote, he was just amazing. He could read something and then he could just tell you word for word what he read days later, end quote, said Win Weir, Dean's stepfather. Dean started feeling sick around 2 weeks prior to this story. I believe this was about April of 2024. His mother, Virginia Green, told NPR, he stayed home from work for a couple days, but things got worse. Quote, Sunday, April 21st, is when I got a call from him that he was really sick and having trouble breathing. Said he went to an immediate care and they told him he had strep throat, end quote, Green said. Green went to check on her son at his home, telling him to call her if he felt worse. Quote, he did call me a couple hours later, told me he was in the emergency room, and he was scared and they found something in his lungs. End quote, she said. He tested positive for influenza B, he tested positive for MRSA, he had pneumonia, his lungs were completely filled up, and from there he just went downhill. End quote. Dean was initially treated at St. Joseph Hospital in Wichita, but as he got worse, he was sent to an Integris hospital in Oklahoma City. It was a stunning turn of events for Dean and his family. Green say he was very healthy. Green says he was very healthy, someone who went to the gym, ran nearly every day, and was very careful about his diet. Quote, this was his first time ever in the hospital. He didn't even have a doctor because he never was sick, end quote, she said. But within days, Dean's kidneys gave out and he was relying on an ECMO life support machine to do the work for his heart and lungs. The night before Dean died, Green said the medical staff in Oklahoma did a bronchoscopy on his lungs. Quote, the doctor said he'd never seen anything like this before in his life. His lungs were totally gummed up and like a mesh over them, end quote. Green says that she asked for an autopsy to determine exactly what killed her son. Results likely take months, she said. Quote, we're not sure what he died of. We know that he had a bunch of viruses, but we don't know if somebody did something to him or did he just get really sick, end quote, she said. Dean followed his father and grandfather into the commercial aviation industry, holding a series of jobs in the same factory in Wichita where they had both worked before. During two interviews in January, Dean said that Spirit pressured employees not to report defects in order to get planes out the factory faster. Quote, no, I'm not saying they don't want you to go out there and inspect a job. You know they do, Dean told NPR. But if you make too much trouble, you will get the Josh treatment. You will get what happened to me, end quote, Dean told NPR. Dean was fired in April of last year in retaliation, he said, for flagging improperly drilled holes in fuselages. Quote, I think they were sending out a message to anybody else. If you're too loud, we will silence you, end quote, Dean said. Dean described what he saw while working for Spirit in a deposition for a lawsuit filed by the company's shareholders, who accused the company of misleading investors by attempting to conceal excessive numbers of defects at the Kansas factory. He was not a plaintiff in the case. In the shareholder lawsuit, Dean said he flagged a significant defect, misdrilled holes in the aft pressure bulkhead of 737 MAX fuselages, months before he was fired. His deposition lays out a series of pivotal dates. October 2022. In his auditor role, Dean realizes Spirit workers misdrilled holes on the 737 MAX aft pressure bulkhead, representing a potential threat to maintaining cabin pressure during flight. The lawsuit accuses the company of concealing the problem. April 13, 2023, Boeing publicly reveals learning of a separate defect related to the tail fin fitting on certain 737 MAX aircrafts. Spirit then confirms that defect. April 26, 2023, Spirit fires Dean, saying he failed to flag the tail issue. In his testimony, Dean said he told the company officials that he might have missed the tail fin defect because he had just discovered the problem with bulkheads and he insisted he was focused on that. August 23rd, 2023. Yes. I couldn't focus on that other defect because you had this other defect that I was really focused on. August 23rd, 2023, Boeing announces it had found fastener holes in the aft pressure bulkhead on certain 737 MAX airplanes that don't match its specifications, resulting in snowmen due to the multiple holes' elongated shape. It's the problem Dean flagged 10 months earlier on the same day. Spirit releases a statement acknowledging the issue. The shareholder lawsuit accuses Spirit of concealing the bulkhead defect, quote, not only from investors, but also apparently from Boeing, end quote. A Spirit spokesman says the company strongly disagrees with the lawsuit's allegations and is fighting the case in court. Boeing is currently in talks to acquire Spirit at the plane maker's leader, concede that they may have outsourced too many parts for the manufacturing chain. Quote, did it go too far? Yeah, probably did. Now it's here and now I've got to deal with it, end quote, Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun said in an interview with CNBC earlier this year. Boeing agreed last month to advance $425 million to Spirit as it works to improve its manufacturing quality. In interviews with NPR, Joshua Dean depicted it would be difficult to replace the experienced workforce that Spirit lost during the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, the mechanics aren't as experienced, neither are the inspectors. We've just lost that, end quote, Dean said. But even after going public with his concerns with Spirit quality control, Dean said there were reasons for optimism about the future, and he said that CEO Patrick Shanahan, who took over in late 2023, was a unique opportunity to change Spirit's culture for the better. Quote, what you really want is you want someone to be able to play the hero, end quote, Dean said, saying Shanahan was a chance to play the new sheriff in town. Quote, we need to make sure that there is no retaliation or intimidation. This culture of you're too loud, you'll be moved or silenced, that's got to go. End quote, Dean said, end of article. That's what we know. Like, that is super weird, is it not? Like, he just comes down with, like, all these ailments and dies within weeks.
I mean, it can't be a coincidence. Something like that can't be a coincidence.
Can be a coincidence, but it's really weird. And that's,
well, not only that, two people
with the same lawyer
out about it.
Just really weird coincidences.
Yeah, stay away from that lawyer. What's his name again?
He's not advertising it, I know it, but his clients die. His last name's Knowles with a K.
He's not talking about time traveling, is he?
Brian Knowles, just so that we all know. Oh man, I'm so sad he's not president. We missed a good timeline.
We missed a good president.
What was his name? Sorry, I need to look that up because he's from Washington.
It's right on the tip of my tongue.
I know.
Basiago.
Andrew Basiago, thank you.
That is terrifying, all the defects.
Yeah.
That they're finding. But yeah, that has to be one of the bigger ones right now with the whistleblowers.
That one's still going on. Well, the OpenAI one is just in its infancy. So that one could be huge. Like that whole thing. If they can't use copyrighted information to train AI, they can't make AI.
Yeah, the implications of that are pretty huge as well. Didn't even think about that one. AI would be recent.
And I do have some updates on them too, but those will come out leaked through the Fringy Minis when I'm not feeling sad.
Okay, which is never, so.
But yeah, Chelsea, those are my whistleblowers. That's it. It actually weirdly started out as an assassination episode, but ended up here. I don't know how. Well, sorry, I do know how, and it has to do with Luigi Mangione being found.
Who's Luigi again?
It's the guy who shot the United Healthcare CEO, allegedly.
Right, okay.
Because I started the episode with the intentions of covering unanswered assassinations in corporate world. But that one was answered, and it kind of killed a lot of that episode.
That makes me not want to whistleblow, because I don't want to be assassinated. I'm still confused about the one in the truck, though. Nobody saw anything.
I know. It is weird that he would pick that time, but also depositions can be very emotional. Like, they're asking you very hard questions, and you have to answer them.
I'm leaning more that way, I think. I don't know. I also don't feel like it's a coincidence, so.
But in any event, they are all weird, and yeah, that's what we're here for, is the weird. And
Tranma.
Praise be to Tranma. I have been Taylor. Here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.